brute force. If it doesn't work, you're just not using enough. You're listening to Soft Web Radio, Special Operations Military News, and Straight Talk with the Guys in the Community.
SoftRep.com, on time, on target, episode 331. Steve Ballastieri is on with me. Steve was on back 10 episodes ago. If you listened to the end of the last episode, I said we'd have Rob O'Neill on here. We are going to do an episode with Rob O'Neill on the power of thought, but we're not going to do it for SoftRep. So if you want to check that out, just look up the power of thought on Apple Podcasts, anywhere that you get your podcasts. And yeah, we're going to have that up. I'm also working on social media for Power of Thought, so we can kind of separate the two. But there's so much great content on there, so if you haven't checked it out, please do. But with that, I'm very grateful that Steve was able to come on with me, and there's a lot to talk about. For those who don't remember, Steve is a former Special Forces NCO and warrant officer, the lone editor and writer for SpecialOperations.com. And the last time you were on, we were talking about these interviews that you've been doing with veterans from older wars. And the biggest news on my end, and I want to hear about the interviews that you've been doing, is that I remember saying to you on our call that we do every week, you know, you got to get in touch with Jim Downing, Lieutenant Jim Downing, who is the second oldest at the time living Pearl Harbor survivor. And just the other week, he passed away. So it really confirms that thought of that these guys are not going to be around much longer. And if you get the opportunity to talk to them, take that opportunity. If they're ever speaking, in your area, it's something that you really should not miss.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sorry I never got to talk with him, because I talking with an actual Pearl Harbor survivor would have been really awesome. I know, it goes to what we talk about, right, Ian? I mean, we're losing so many of these guys every day, and it's really sad. And in fact, I mentioned to you offline, the very first interview we did with the Iwo Jima survivor, he was the backseater in a dive bomber, and he's in the hospital right now. He's pretty ill. And of course, anytime somebody in their 90s is ill, it's very serious. So
yeah,
hopefully I'll get over to see him here real soon. But yeah, we're continuing to drive along with that. We have a couple of more veterans online that we're hoping to get into a studio or visit them at their homes, and we're driving on with that. And their stories are always awesome to hear.
So the guy who's in the hospital, and what's his name again?
His name is Roland LaChance. He was in the Navy. He was the backseater in a Dauntless dive bomber, and he was over Iwo Jima, and yeah, he's a very interesting man. I've known him for quite a few years, and to talk with him, he's a really cool guy, and still has a grip of when you shake his hand, if you don't shake it very hard going back, he'll crush it. He lives in a revolutionary era old farmhouse. It's like 250 years old in central Massachusetts. He lives up over a lake. It's a beautiful place. And, we talked about, his life, how the Second World War affected him. I mean, what the prevailing thing when you talk to these gentlemen about their experiences, a lot of them were World War II, they might have only had 12 to 15 months combat time, but it affected the rest of their lives and how they decided to live the rest of their lives.
Of course.
Which to me is amazing. you know, that small, you know, you took a man who was 93, 94 years old, and you're taking a 12 or 15 month segment of his life, and that is the prevailing, you know, factor in how he lived the rest of it.
So I'm guessing that that's an interview people will see at some point. It's not up now, though, right?
No, we're still gathering those, and I'm not sure how Software TV is going to progress with that. I mean, that's still something that, you know, needs to be worked on. We're gathering as many of them as we can, and you know, once they have enough of them, we'll start seeing those. And I think the people who read our obviously our website and like the history part of things, I think they'll really enjoy these, because every guy has a different story and their experiences differ, but I think people will really like them.
I can't wait to see it, because it really is long overdue. It's something that I know guys at the company have been talking about for a long time, and you know, it's also, as we said earlier, it's one of those things that you really have to act on now, because many of these guys are not going to be with us 5 years, 10 years down the line.
No, and that's exactly it. I mean, we're losing them at such a rate every day. And like I said, Roland was our first interview that we did, and we went to his home because he doesn't get out as much. He was very active. He still is active, but I mean, you know, he's slowing down a lot. At 94, I think you're allowed to slow down a little bit.
Of course.
But yeah, but now he's been sick with pneumonia in the hospital, and hopefully I'll have a chance to go over and see him today, and hopefully we'll see him back on his feet. But those guys, they're getting up there in years. Even our Vietnam veterans, I've done a few interviews with them, and you know, they're not spring chickens anymore either. We tend to think of Vietnam vets as, you know, younger than they really are. Some of the guys who fought in the 60s now, you know, they're getting up there. They're like, you know, in their 70s now. And it's tough. We did a couple of interviews with them guys, and, you know, guys who fought during the Tet Offensive, and paratroopers with the 101st and 173rd, and We're trying to get a couple of more of the World War II guys who fought in the Battle of the Bulge, but they've been ill. There's a couple of Korean War vets that we want to talk to as well, because that seems to be the one war that doesn't get a lot of airplay.
It's funny that you say that these guys are allowed to slow down, because it made me think of, if people haven't heard it, by the way, Power of Thought. I just looked up which episode it was. Look up Power of Thought, episode 13. We had on Captain Jerry Yellen, who was a World War II fighter pilot, flew the last combat mission over Japan in the P-51 Mustang, former Army Air Force, and which, by the way, I learned this from the episode when I was researching. So, like, my grandpa was an Army Air Corps vet, which eventually became the Air Force, but for a short period of time at the end of World War II, it was the Army Air Forces. I'm sure you know this. Mm-hmm. I did not know this. I just thought it went from the Army Air Corps to the Air Force. But anyway, the guy is 94 years old, and he's still flying planes.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, insane.
You know, I hope that I'm still breathing when I'm 80, never mind 94, and to be able to still fly. I mean, it shows, I mean, some guys have a great way of taking care of themselves, and they must be doing something right.
Yeah, I have to give you his contact, too, come to think of it, because he was great on the show. Like I said, if you haven't heard it, I don't know if you have or the audience, but episode 13 of Power of Thought, that guy has such an incredible story.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to talk with him.
Yeah, he was excellent. And he still does speaking engagements. You know, he was talking about being Jewish and that he speaks at Jewish war veterans events and that type of thing, and I think he still does other speaking engagements, put out a book, so he's still very active. As we've talked about before, there's some of these guys who want to make sure that their story is told before they pass away, and some of the guys are very quiet, and you don't hear them say one thing about their combat service, as you said, you know, with your dad, for example.
Yeah, earlier this week, I had spoke to our managing editor, the Odyssey, and I had mentioned I had met another Marine Corps veteran from Iwo Jima, who was fighting on the ground, and he had spoken with me, pretty openly. I was actually in the waiting room at a hospital, and I saw his hat, and we started talking, and I told him what I had been doing. And he smiled and said, I appreciate what you're doing. I think it's worthwhile. I just don't choose to talk about that on camera. And I can totally understand that. I totally get it. And some guys don't really feel comfortable doing that. Some guys do. And again, from talking to him and the short amount of time I did, he had a very interesting story. He had fought in a couple of the other island campaigns, and then he went ashore at Iwo. He didn't stay there very long. He got wounded in action and was, he was taken on a hospital ship. So he was only there about 3 or 4 days, but his experiences were pretty intense, to say the least.
So now, if a guy says that he's not comfortable being interviewed, doesn't want to be on video, do you just take no for an answer, or do you try to like nudge these guys a little bit? Because I've encountered that just as a radio producer with people saying like, it's not about me, I don't want to come on. And sometimes you can coax them to make an appearance.
Yeah, well, in fact, most of the guys I've talked to had to be coaxed a little bit, because most of them are very humble. And they, they take the attitude, no one wants to hear what I have to say. I wasn't a hero, or I didn't do anything special. And, we tell them everyone's story is important, no matter what you did, no matter where you served. Everyone's story is important because everybody that served is important in our, the way we look at it. And, I tried to nudge him because I told him, hey, this isn't about me or you. It's really about all of the veterans and of every, era. But he just said, no, he just, he's like, certain things will come out of our conversation if we start talking. And some of those things I want to leave where they are. And I can understand that. So,
yeah, it's kind of funny to me when sometimes these guys say that, they say like, I didn't really do anything. Why do you want to interview me? And you're right. Everybody has a story.
Right. And, a Marine rifleman who fought in a couple of campaigns in World War II, to include Iwo Jima, he has a story to tell, and it's important, and he was wounded in action, obviously. So, that he saw a lot of combat. And even if, his experience on Iwo Jima was only 3 or 4 days, that was 3 or 4 days of as we know in the history, that was amongst the most intense combat anyone saw during the Second World War. I mean, it was an 8-square-mile strip of volcanic ash, and we lost 7,000 men there. I mean, that speaks of the ferocity that happened there. And you just have to tip your hat to that generation of men, because it had to have been an incredibly difficult place, to serve.
So there's several guys that you have interviewed since we last spoke, that did agree, right?
Yes. And, we spoke with a couple of Vietnam vets. I spoke to one who arrived in Vietnam in early 1968 as Tet Offensive was wearing down, and he served in Cu Chi, where the Vietnamese had all the tunnels there. And we talked about his life. He was an infantryman, and, they did a lot of ambushes and, sweeps and stuff like that. And he talked about the Vietnamese civilians, because they seemed to bear the brunt of the war, no matter which side they were on. And a lot of them, unfortunately, really didn't take a side. They, more than anything, they wanted to be left alone, and that was the prevailing thought that he had of that era. And I spoke with another guy who was a paratrooper with the 101st and the 173rd Airborne, and his experiences were a little bit
different. I'm sorry, which war?
Vietnam as well.
Okay.
One of our World War II vets who fought as an infantryman in the Battle of the Bulge has been ill as well. He's been in rehab, and we're hoping to get him in the studio real soon. You know, I had met him before. We had talked, and he talked about facing a German Tiger tank with nothing in his head but a bazooka.
Wow.
So that should be some interesting stories to talk about, you know, when you're talking about an 18, 19-year-old kid and, you know, German tanks are coming at you and you're sitting there with nothing but a bazooka that's basically a, you know, won't go through their armor unless you let it roll past you and you shoot it in the rear. So you talk about some guys who had some courage, you know, I think that tips the scale there.
What was the tone like when they're recalling these stories? Because it's probably something that they haven't talked about in years.
Most of the tone is most of them, it's amazing. They're upbeat about it. I mean, they knew, hey, you know, a lot of them don't have any ill will toward the guys that they fought. They take it, hey, you know, he had his job to do, I had mine. And, you know, at the time, you know, the prevailing thought is you don't think about it until after the fact. Now, as you're older, you look back and you wonder how we survived. But the prevailing thought is, you know, they take it, you know, their recall is really, really good. Even after 70 plus years, you talk to these guys and they can remember every little detail down to what they were doing at the time, you know, maybe a battle started. You know, talk to one guy who was talking about his, you know, this Battle of the Bulge guy, what he was actually eating in a hole when the Germans attacked him. So, you know, it's interesting. And then, they all have the little things that they remember that, you know, it didn't seem important at the time. And as they get older, it tends to come back to them and they remember certain little details that I find always interesting.
I'm also guessing that the veteran-to-veteran connection helps when you tell them your background, that you're special operations. They know that you're someone who they could comfortably relay that story to.
Yeah, and in fact, one of the Vietnam vets I had interviewed, he was the infantryman that fought in Cu Chi, and he had done an interview with a local television station in a few years ago, and he said it didn't go well. He was very uncomfortable, and he said that, you know, he had told his wife he wouldn't do that again, but then I had talked to him. We had talked pretty extensively about it prior to him coming to the local television studio where we filmed it at. And so he felt very comfortable and he was all for it. He was like, I think this one will go much better. And then when we finished, he was like, that was really interesting. I could have talked for another 20 or 30 minutes. So
that's cool.
Hopefully,
man,
that will come across on film. You know?
Yeah, I think it probably sets the tone and gets them to have the right attitude about getting in there and being comfortable telling these stories. And what's like your favorite thing to ask these guys?
You know, what I'd like to ask them is, like, you know, how did your service, because everyone served in different eras and different places, how did it affect you personally after your service was over? Did it change the way you looked at your life in the, you know, back home? Did it change what you had planned? Because, you know, a lot of guys, especially the World War II guys, they grew up, even up here in Massachusetts, most people came from little farming communities and they had nothing, you know, more planned with their lives than, hey, coming back, I'm going to take over the family farm. And a lot of these guys, they decided they were going to go into some kind of, you know, service related type of career where they still want to serve people. A lot of them went into local politics, you know, different types of things and served in different, you know, realms or whatever you wanted to call it. I find that really interesting because a lot of these guys, you know, they saw there was a lot bigger world out there than just their own little, you know, farm in the, you know, a bucolic little Massachusetts, you know, town. And all of a sudden now things have changed, and it affected them, I think, for the better. I mean, most of these guys said my service made me a better person today than I would have been if I had never gone in.
If I had to guess, though, even though you're saying like there's a pattern of jobs that they've gone into that are similar, I'm sure it's a very different story for all of them. I mean, it's like a kind of a connecting theme I've seen on this show is just that veterans are not a monolith. You're not going to get veterans as a whole to agree on many things because they're all individuals.
Right. Absolutely. You know, and then, you know, one guy went into the family business. Another guy, you know, became, you know, he served in many different aspects of local politics. He was a school committee member. He was, you know, a town selectman, you know, served in different committees. And, you know, another one went into the VA. He served disabled veterans. So, you know, I think that's a really, you know, telling thing that they decided to keep giving back to the communities and to the country. And that error that they had of military service stuck with them, and it affected the way they lived the rest of their lives in a very positive manner.
All right, so we've teased this out pretty good. People are probably like, when do I get to see this? Do we have any idea?
No, I don't. I mean, that's above my realm. I'm just helping, you know, put some of these together. We have the guys from SoftRep TV, and you know, I know they're very, very busy. They're always out doing other stuff. But I'm sure, like I said, once we get these enough of them together, we'll probably start seeing these being put out, and hopefully we'll get them out really soon. I think, you know, I think it's something that our subscribers were, well, not subscribers anymore now.
Well, SoftRep TV is subscribers, so.
Oh, that's still a subscription, yeah. But, you know, I think everyone out there that reads our stuff, that listens, I think that they'll be really intrigued by this, and I think it's worthwhile.
Yeah, and I'd be down to play some of it on the podcast because I think people want to hear it. How much raw footage do you have at this point?
I'm not sure. I'd have to go back. I think the longest one was probably 55 minutes, and most of them we talked for about 30, 35 minutes. I mean, so we have a couple of hours of good footage coming in, and I'm sure, you know, we're going to get a lot more of that as we progress. And, you know, I have another one lined up with a quadriplegic special forces officer down in Texas. We're going to have to do it remotely, but we're going to do that real soon. He's a very intriguing guy, and I can't wait to do it with him.
I'm excited for it. I'm excited to see it all. And then also with what you're up to at specialoperations.com, I mean, for those who don't know of the Hurricane media sites, specialoperations.com is more of the history-oriented site. And you're working on a piece, or is it a recent piece, on the 512 Allied Airmen by the OSS in World War II?
Yeah, we posted that yesterday.
Got it. Okay.
It was something that, it was on specialops.com yesterday. A few months ago, I had been, I love reading the OSS because that was the forerunners of the CIA in World War II, and then the special forces. And so I talked to a guy down at the Suffolk, down in Tampa, the big convention we were at last summer or last spring. And, we spoke about that, and the OSS, and then there was this operation they ran in Yugoslavia where all these downed airmen in World War II were being stranded there. And they sent in a handful of OSS guys, and they rescued actually 512 Allied airmen. They made an airstrip right under the noses of the Germans, basically by hand with no tools. And they were able to sneak in a bunch of C-47s and get all of these airmen out. They didn't lose a man doing it. The story was incredible. And it's amazing that it never been really publicized. And so I asked for Christmas and received this book called The Forgotten 500. And in the book, it explains the entire operation. It was a fascinating story. And these guys who did it were absolutely incredible. And it was a tremendous story. They got them all out. And then 60 years later, and a lot of them went back to Serbia, actually. And the guy said, we didn't really have a great relationship with in the 90s, but these Serbian farmers had protected American and British pilots, and they hid them from the Germans. They fed them. They nursed their wounds and helped us get these people out. And it was a tremendous story. And we put that up on the website yesterday.
Yeah, I see it up right here. So it's Operation Halyard, one of the great rescue stories of World War II.
Yeah, absolutely.
The thing is, you write so many articles, so that's not even on the front page anymore.
No, yeah. Yeah, there's another one. Actually, today, I think it was about the most decorated Navy SEAL, Ed Byers. He won the medal. He was awarded the Medal of Honor, I should say, just a couple of years ago by President Obama. And that was from an operation where he freed an American hostage in Afghanistan in 2012. And again, that was a really great story. I remember when he was awarded the Medal of Honor, I watched the clips of him, and then he was on Stephen Colbert's show. I think it was the next evening. He did an interview with Stephen Colbert, which was really, really well done.
And then the other piece of history that you covered is that as we're recording this, which is March 1st, this is the 16th anniversary of Operation Anaconda in Afghanistan.
Right, and that's what I'm working on today. As a matter of fact, hopefully that will be up in the morning.
Yep, so it'll be up by the time people hear this.
Yeah. Yep, and it should be up by March 2nd. I always try to get them out first thing in the morning. But, Operation Anaconda was was one of the first big operations we had over there. And there, a lot of guys were killed and injured during that, during that big operation where the Taliban and Al-Qaeda guys tried to slug it out. And it didn't work out too well for them. But we did suffer a lot of casualties there. And there was a lot of different troops involved, not only special forces guys, but conventional units as well, plus the United States Air Force, who really put some air support down for our ground troops.
Awesome. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. You guys will have that up. I'll link to it. Operation Anaconda in Afghanistan began today as we're recording this in 2002. You could follow Steve, of course, on Twitter at SteveB7SFG. I know that the last time we talked, we did talk a little NFL because of your side gig. So I guess that is slowing down a little bit.
Yeah. And things have calmed down a little bit since the Super Bowl's been over. But, you know, with the NFL combine and the draft right around the corner, it never really stops anymore. You know, there's really no off season anymore. In addition to my soft rep stuff and the special ops and the interviews, still doing some NFL draft stuff as well. So it keeps me busy.
Very cool. So yeah, as a reminder for those who are listening, it's appropriate to talk Soft Rep TV because this is what we're talking about is something that you're going to see on Soft Rep TV in the near future, hopefully very near future, which is our channel that offers the most exclusive shows, documentaries, and interviews covering the most exciting military content today. The premier show on there is Training Cell, which follows former Special Operations Forces as they participate in the most advanced training in the country. Everything from shooting schools, defensive driving, jungle and winter warfare, climbing, and much more. And you can watch this content at softreptv.us. We have a limited time promotion of only $4.99 a month, so get on that. And then also, if you haven't gotten a chance, check out the SoftRep Crate Club. It's a subscription to get a box of badass tactical and survival gear delivered to your door every month. So it's like tactical Christmas every month. Here's the kicker. All the gear is handpicked and tested by former Spec Ops guys, so you know you're getting quality gear that's going to work when you need it to. In the past, we've sent fire starters, multi-tools, EDC med kits, and it's all picked, once again, by Special Operations veterans. You're supporting a veteran-owned company. And to subscribe to that, visit crateclub.us. We have gift options available as well. That's crateclub.us. Anything else that, you're currently working on, Steve, that we haven't covered? Because all of that is really exciting, and, I urge everybody to head over to specialoperations.com.
In fact, yeah, you just mentioned the Crate Club. I've had the opportunity and the blessing to test out some of their stuff. And when you talked about the fire starter and the fire starting materials, yeah, I'm going to be doing a piece on that in probably the upcoming weeks. And that is some outstanding material that it's in the Crate Club. I can't wait to tell people about it because, as you know, as a special forces guy, we tend to look at things a little on the jaded side because you never know what you're going to get. People say, oh, this works really good. Well, I can tell you that the fire starting stuff we got in our crate was some outstanding stuff. And I hope to be able to write about that real soon as well.
Yeah, I was actually just over at my town dock where I live in Port Washington yesterday. You know, as the sun was going down, it's finally like some nice weather here, even though apparently tonight it won't be. But yesterday was very nice weather. And I brought my binoculars from the premium Crate Club. And man, those are amazing. And it's cool for times like that when you have a nice view of the water and, you know, some stuff that you want to see over the water that you can't see with the naked eye. It's all just great stuff, which at the time I know was picked out by Drew Dwyer. Scott Whitner is more doing that now.
Yeah, Scott does a great job with that.
Scott's the man, absolutely, and I got to get him back on soon. Yeah, so the last thing I'll say is as we're wrapping this one up, head over once again to the Power of Thought podcast, and you'll hear yet another full interview with Navy SEAL Robert O'Neill, best known as the UBL shooter. And this will be the third time we've had him in studio, but that's on the Power of Thought. So if you haven't checked that out, go to that now. Like I said, in the next few days, I'm going to launch like a Twitter and Instagram for the Power of Thought, where we're actually 29 episodes deep on the Power of Thought. So it's about time that we kind of launch our own social media for that. And I feel like most of you guys who listen have checked out that podcast, but if you haven't, please do so. Because many of you are wondering, like, what happened to Brandon? What's he up to? He's still doing a weekly podcast, but that's the podcast he's doing. So Hurricane Group as a whole is doing 3 podcasts a week. So it's plenty of material for you guys to check out and enjoy each week.
Awesome. Yeah, I look forward to hearing that Rob O'Neill interview that you're going to be doing with Brandon and him. Look forward to listening to that. As always, he's always an interesting guy to listen. We're talking about guys with a lot of experience. Not many guys can say they did what he did.
No, that is for sure. But yeah, thanks, Steve. Thanks so much for coming on and doing this with me. Love having you on and hearing what you're up to, and look forward to seeing these interviews.
Okay, thank you, and thank you again for having me on, Ian. It was always a pleasure to talk.
You've been listening to Soft Rep Radio. New episodes up every Wednesday and Friday. For all of the great content from our veteran journalists, join us and become a Team Room member today at softrep.com. Follow the show on Instagram and Twitter at Soft Rep Radio. And be sure to also check out the Power of Thought podcast, hosted by Hurricane Group CEO and Navy SEAL sniper instructor, Brandon Webb.